welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland.
From where, you say?
The People's Republic of Portland.
Oh, yeah.
Nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We're the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, and simpler living. And today...
Think on your feet. It's still the thing from last week.
Some wheels that are sweet.
That's
working.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, nailed it.
Why do you say that?
Because today we have Jude Gerace from Sugar Wheelworks.
That's right. Hi, Jude.
Hi, Brock.
How's it going?
Hi, Aaron. It's going fantastic. How are you?
Good. Thank you for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
Excellent. Yeah, we're going to talk all about Sugar Wheelworks and what it is that Jude likes to do around town and outside of town.
And she's not cosplaying as Amelia Earhart.
Well, that's true. That's the thing. Yeah. You have done this.
Indeed.
Oh, sorry, did I reveal too much? Spoiler alert, everybody.
Yeah, well, it's okay. We already talked about it, so maybe we'll release that as like a bonus at some point soon. Aaron.
Yeah.
How was your weekend? How was your week?
It was all right. I spent most of it... I don't know why I'm like fooling around with the mic.
The microphone?
Right,
yeah.
I spent most of it just emailing Craigslist ads.
Oh, yeah. You're on the house search. How's that going?
I hate it.
It's tricky, right?
So much.
You figure out that's why like I decided to stop moving.
Right.
Not because I'm necessarily like I'm at the best house I could ever live in, but like who wants to move that many times?
Exactly. And you know, I don't know. There's a lot of month to months and like 6 month renters out there.
Which means,
and I'll take what I can get. But I really, part of me, like the more I've been doing this, the more I'm like, is there a 2 year lease I can sign?
Right.
I don't have to. I don't have to do this for a while.
I'd love to be here for like, the next five.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah.
Just let me. With some sort of like, not locked in. You could change it if you wanted to. I just want to know that I could be here for 5 years if I chose.
If I chose to, yes.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of a place like that. I mean, I guess that's called like buying a house, right? So there's that.
But that's the thing. Like you got 6 months, you got, I guess you got month to month, then 6 months, and then a year. And then from year, you got to like this giant jump to 30 years. However long a mortgage takes.
There should be an in between. There should be like, I don't know, like a long-term lease option.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, you know, Airbnb is also kind of sort of serving that function, but it's too expensive.
No, you can rent like a couple months on Airbnb, could you?
Yeah, I suppose you could. Just keep on booking them out. I feel like it would stack up and get too expensive.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah, it could not be cost effective.
Right.
Jude, anyways, that's what I did.
How long are you locked into your living situation?
prior to this living situation, I moved about once every year.
Okay.
About 18 years.
So you know what
Isn't
we're talking
that a
about.
Pain in the ass?
But you know, we bought a house 3 years ago.
Congratulations.
No, that is it is. It's like the best thing ever. Like a sense of home, and like that's the compassion I have for you know, everyone that's like in the situation that you are. We have two housemates that have been with us now for one of them for almost 3 years and one for a year and a half. And
nice.
It's the one thing that I can promise them is that because our cost is fixed, like their rent won't increase and, you know, they can stay as long as they want.
You're a benevolent landlord.
No, an understanding person who is so happy to have such great housemates.
That's a better way to frame it.
Yeah. And it's really hard to find bike parking. So for people really into it, we have somehow a 4-car garage in our
Portland
house.
But well, so that's like eight bikes per space, right, or something. So you have like a 16 bike garage.
That's
no,
right.
It's like a 32 bike garage.
Even better.
Yeah.
I looked at two houses and I had to turn them down because there's nowhere to put my bikes.
Yeah, it's a valid question. Where will it go? Because like when I lived at the apartment complex, we lived really close to Belmont before Belmont fell.
Right.
Yeah. Because now like Belmont's still my favorite street in Portland, I guess.
Really?
As far as like, I saw it for the first time in like 2001 or something. And so like I liked what Belmont was. And I kind of liked a couple of its different iterations. And now it's like just full of people that are those damn kids with their tight pants and their loud music. And they all want to go dancing.
Well, where do you live? Do you live on Belmont?
No, I used to live there. So when I did live there, I was in an apartment complex that had no bike parking.
Oh, man.
And we had to carry the bicycles down down like a concrete staircase with a 90-degree turn at the bottom and a locked door at the bottom.
You could write a blues song about
that. I know, yeah. That'd be the best, like, yeah.
Speaking of...
Bicycle blues.
There you go. Speaking of Belmont Street, I went by our old haunt.
Oh.
The Triple Nickel.
What's it look like these days?
There was a big... pink Hummer limo parked outside of it.
Oh it's over. I'm not going there again.
as we walked by it. So what had happened was Anna and I went to see Hail Caesar, which great. It's the latest from the Coen brothers.
Yeah. I heard Mark Maron extolling its virtues recently.
If you like Coen brothers, you're going to love Hail Caesar.
Yeah.
I would say if you're new to the Coen brothers, you may not get some of the jokes.
Right. Well, I mean, they're all about subtlety. Yeah. But it's a movie you could see.
But anyway, so we were trying to catch a bus back to where I'm house sitting. And so we walked over to Belmont and that took us by the Triple Nickel.
Which was full of someone that had just piled out of it.
As we walked by.
Like, a pink stretch Hummer limo.
Like, just breathed this or exhaled this like annoying sigh or a sigh of annoyance. We're like just, oh my God, what is this?
What kind of podcast do you think people in a pink limo stretch Hummer?
Hey, that is a good question.
Like, what are they listening to?
Does Paris Hilton make a podcast?
Oh,
because that would be my guess.
Wait, she's still around?
Well, she's not dead, as far as I know.
Oh.
No.
Yeah.
I think she's still.
Okay.
You think that's what's going on?
I don't know. That's the thing.
I'm so curious about that life. Like, it's so.
Yeah. I feel like they're not listening to, like, thoughtful conversations. I could be wrong.
I mean, but maybe thoughtful means something different to them.
Right. No, I'm tracking. Like, this is something
I've wondered. You guys gave me the beer. I told you I don't drink on Mondays.
And this is why.
This is your fault.
No, this is something I thought for a real long time. Like, you know how there's, like, this sort of counterculture, this bike culture that we have here in Portland that, like, you know, we've got the shift list. We've got, like, Facebook that we organize, like, all these rides and bike events. And and then we talk about, like, infrastructure, you know, and advocacy. And I often think, like, is there some sort of car culture that's happening where, like...
No, because it's normalized.
Their version of the... Well, I guess, yeah. But still, like, I often wonder if...
Oh, yeah, like car shows, like when a car show comes to town.
Yeah, like classic
exactly.
cars, right?
Yeah, totally. Something like that.
Or something along the lines of like what, the Honda Element, like owners group, I think, that exists here in town.
Yeah. Really?
There is a Prius owners group, too.
Oh, sure.
We were.
What are they? They listen to NPR.
Yeah.
they listen to the Fresh Air podcast.
Yeah.
I would imagine.
Yeah.
And what, like The World.
And they rev their engines. Quietly.
Someone like rolls, like there's two Priuses rolling up to a traffic light and one is like rolling slower than the other one. And that's like the rev of the engine. It's like, I generated more energy than you as I rolled up to the stoplight.
I'm not even kidding you.
It happens, right?
Sadly, you know, we're also car owners and we own a Prius.
Oh.
Because in Portland.
Get out. Leave the studio.
You have like one of two choices, right? It's a Subaru or a Prius.
Right. No, those are the types.
Right. And this has created a lot of issues.
Mm.
Yeah.
So you mean you have friends of the opposite?
It's created a lot of issues?
It's like one of the only things we drive maybe once every other week.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's like to go hiking or something like that. And it's like my husband drives so slow because he's an analyst and he wants to optimize.
Oh, sure. That's how I drive a Prius.
He wants to optimize the amount of power output. So we're going like 20 miles an hour. And he's like, I don't know why all these people are going so fast. And
I'm
sinking lower and lower.
Totally. And that's where it doesn't help.
Yeah.
I'm a school bus driver, so we're taught to drive that way anyways. And so, like, I have no – just like, yeah, just like if someone who's an analyst would not have a problem with that. Neither do I.
Wait, so I have a question.
Oh, sure.
You're really a school bus driver?
I am still wearing my idea to take that off.
That is the coolest – kids must have the best time with you.
I hope so. I try.
I wish that you were my school bus driver.
But you don't, is the thing.
No, we had Carl the bus driver.
Yeah.
And Carl, and then we had Amir the bus driver.
Uh-huh. Good folks?
Oh, really? I think I've met Amir. He's good people.
Bus drivers are like, I don't know, such a really big part of your childhood.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think everyone should go out and get a job because we need staffing. And I'm in a position to recruit people, but that's a completely different.
They took me.
That's true.
You're a bus driver too?
As of the beginning of the month.
We haven't shared this yet with the world.
Wait, you're school bus drivers? Just so that I'm clear.
Right.
Portland Public Schools.
This.
Wait, am I allowed to say
this? I do.
I mean, you've said that 100 times, yeah.
I am so happy.
Yeah, so anyways. There's a few of us out there, yeah. Well, that's the thing, is that there are more and more young people doing that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
There seems to be an increasing, should I say, age gap in the...
I don't know if it's I think we're getting older. And
okay.
So the people, yeah. So the old people look even older to us.
Okay. So it's not like that there's a bunch of young people coming in. It's just that there are people our age are young.
Yeah. We're now of the age where we have grown-up jobs.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. And now that, now the grown-ups look really old. Except.
Well, I just lost a bet now. Thank you.
Well, I'm sorry. Speaking of which, I went down to Eugene for a school bus thing. Eugene,
you
Oregon.
Lost a bet?
Wait,
well,
I'm sorry,
no,
do
not really.
For a conference?
Yeah, kind of a training sort of thing. It was a, hey, school bus drivers, don't do drugs. One of those.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They took a school bus and flipped it on its side, which was kind of interesting.
For real?
Yeah, so you could walk through it and kind of see what it'd be like to try to evacuate one when it was in that position.
Oh, that's the coolest.
They had another one that was upside down. So it was pretty intense. But
did you get to see them flip it over?
No.
Oh.
No. They did that all.
I'm more interested in that than the actual bus being flipped over.
Apparently, they did it with two tow trucks, and they put them onto sheets of plywood to make sure that they didn't either scuff up the bus.
Right.
Or
that's what I was thinking. How do you flip this over without cracking all the windows?
Right. Well, and one had already been in an accident. I think it was probably on its way to the salvage or something.
Okay.
So
there
is that. But but Eugene, Oregon, I just got to say, have you spent much time there, dude?
I lived there for 4 years.
Okay, so you know very well.
I know Eugene very well.
Yeah. There is no place where it's easier to find amazing beer and good vegetarian food.
Really?
Yeah. That town is amazing.
You know where is one place where you can find amazing beer but maybe not vegetarian food?
Well, you could bring your own. Yes, to the Beer Mongers.
That's right, on 12th and Division.
That's right. Yeah. We, in fact, are enjoying product from them right now.
Yes. Is this where this delicious Freem beer is coming from?
It is. Well, I mean, it came from Freem first, but then the Beer Mongers at Southeast Division 12.
So they're purveyors of fine beer?
They are, yeah. You can't find a shitty beer in there.
Wow.
Yeah. I tried one time. I had to go somewhere else.
Even their bargain bin of old stuff is still really classy.
Yeah.
So I just want to can I just pause for 1 second here? I noticed that yours says root beer.
That is correct.
So that's not a beer.
It's a root beer.
Which is good news, because even people who don't drink can go to the Beer Mongers at Southeast Division
and
12.
I
want to make very clear
to
everybody that when you said, what beer do I want?
Yes.
I was expecting all of us.
Oh, right.
So now I'm the only one.
Well, no,
normally,
but you're okay.
Normally Brock would be drinking with you.
I had so much beer on my visit to Eugene this last weekend. That I feel a bit under the weather. I kind of have this kind of sinal nasus thing.
Nasal sinus,
yes.
Mm. I like the sinal nasus, actually.
I do have
that too,
pretty
yes.
Cool. So anyways, that's why I'm drinking tea tonight. But we thought that this might in fact
that's
alleviate.
Right.
I have stinging kombucha hot sauce.
Nasus.
It's raw and fermented. Wait, no, raw fermented. It's made by Tabor. Made by Tabor?
John Tabor?
I suppose. It says on the label, made by Tabor. Anyways.
Or Mount.
Yeah. Right. That's what I was thinking, by the mountain in East Portland, Oregon. So you can buy a bottle of this kombucha hot sauce from the Beer Mongers.
That's right.
It's a bit of a non-sequitur.
I've never seen it anywhere else, though.
Right, yeah. This is fascinating. So I figured, why not just try it tonight, you know?
Right. I've been looking at that for some time.
My sinal nasus problem. So I'm going to take, right now I'm taking a shot of... stinging kombucha hot sauce.
I'm
witnessing.
How big should the shot be?
I'm both afraid. You decide that for yourself. I'm not going to take responsibility.
I feel like a lick would be okay.
Probably.
But you seem like you're going to go big or go home.
Yep.
And yeah, there it goes.
You're not drinking the whole thing,
man.
You
can stop now.
That was like a tablespoon's worth.
Oh, even still on its own.
How's that working for you?
It's interesting. I mean, it does taste raw. I think I would have to have more to really appreciate the kombucha attributes.
Yeah.
But it does work.
How would it taste? How do you think it would taste with other things, though?
It's really good. It reminds me of over at the burrito place. There's that kind of like sauce of a similar color.
Mm-hmm.
Except this one apparently still has live cultures in it, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not in as much pain as I thought I would be.
Oh. Well,
it's kind of pleasant. Although I'm just like
what
slightly
you're talking about
up.
At Los Gorditos is the habanero sauce, right?
Yeah, so I think it might be something like that.
Yeah, so this contains no habanero, so you're okay.
I'm okay. I got just like the tiniest bit of stinging lip, but I think.
Yeah. I'd like to see how this plays out over time.
Yeah, we'll see what happens over the course of tonight. Yeah, exactly. So, anyways, Eugene, still there. And the Pizza Research Institute, which has been around for a while. Are you familiar with that one, Jude?
I don't even know where to begin with the pizza. PRI?
Yes.
I used to go to it when it was just in the tiny, tiny little storefront off to the side where if there was a... What is Bob Marley's music called?
Like reggae?
Yeah, reggae.
Like reggae concert?
Like a reggae concert nearby, Pizza Research Institute would not be open.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it was...
All the employees.
Yeah, the owners would go. It was just...
Oh, I see.
Yeah, so it was
I thought it was
so
like they don't serve
tiny.
Hippies.
No, not at all. So tiny. And I remember all I would get is the chef special.
Which was?
Whatever the chef decided to do. It's the first time like ricotta cheese and pear on pizza. I'm not a pizza lover, but I am a PRI lover.
Yeah.
And it is... It has made me so happy how well they've done in Eugene.
For sure. They're still around, yeah. And like...
And bigger.
Yeah. The owner lady was there serving us, like taking our order. And the bartender was hilarious. Just like this quintessentially like born and raised in Eugene, sort of like, yeah.
Owner lady and bartender are amazing.
Totally.
Owner man was pretty cool too.
Yeah. I never met the owner man, but maybe he was...
Owner son was good too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Yeah. They seem like good people.
I think so. I mean, they make great pizza.
Yeah.
I mean, really good pizza.
Yeah, they do. No, it was really like, I never know what to expect when I have vegetarian pizza because like, you don't know.
But that's all they do. But I don't think they do any meat pizzas.
They don't. No, I looked at the entire list and I was like, well, who needs meat? Because these all look amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah. So anyways, I recommend if anybody ever goes down there, just one more stop on your way.
I think you need to like, I think that needs to be your trip.
Go to the Pizza Research Institute. If anything else happens, it's kismet.
Yeah, and Sweet Life afterwards. I mean, that's kind of the...
Sweet Life was what?
Sweet Life is the patisserie there that's also...
Oh, okay.
But when, again, it used to be really this tiny kind of hole-in-the-wall place.
Yeah.
And then you go over to Sam Bond's Garage afterwards for show.
Right, right.
I mean, that's the Eugene trifecta.
And Sam Bond's is like the oldest brewery there, I think.
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a fantastic neighborhood. The interesting thing to me is that I think the last couple of times Adele and I have gone down there, we saw a town that largely had not been touched by any sort of like redevelopment or gentrification, and it looks like finally, there are some bigger buildings being built, and you know, with attention comes big money and all that.
Yeah.
So, it's not nearly to the extent that you see it in Portland, I think, because in Portland you can't ignore it. In Eugene, you can still ignore it, but it's starting to happen. So I guess enjoy it while we can.
I mean, I don't know. How much of that can you really stop?
I don't want to think about it.
Okay. It's a fair point.
Now you have that is a good question. And we're going to move on. So anyway.
This has been the most depressing episode we've ever recorded.
Oh, no.
No, it's fine.
No, it's not.
I'm so sorry, guys.
No.
It's not. It's actually pretty far from.
We should sit and think about what that one would be sometime.
It's the one
but
where
not now.
We...
Oh. Okay. Jude, you're from Sugar Real Works.
the look on your face.
It's so true. I am.
So before Sugar Wheel Works, let's just say that you were helping out with Live the Revolution, the bicycle storytelling event from the Bicycle Transportation Alliance.
Yeah, actually, that is an event that we started. We started it?
Mm-hmm,
really? In conjunction with beginning Sugar Wheel Works, which was then Epic Wheel Works.
Yes.
And we decided that we wanted to have an event where we could leverage any money we put into advertising with doing something great for our community. And this was the sixth Live the Revolution, and it's the fourth year it's been a storytelling event.
Nice. What was the other version of it?
It was just a big party.
Oh, okay.
That was fun.
Okay.
But we wanted something unique and sustainable, and then slowly we've been working with the staff of the BTA to kind of take it over and really make it their own. And they do a fantastic job. I'm so honored to work with that staff.
Well, and sustainable means that you sell a bunch of beer, right? Like that's
totally
sustainable. Number one is like
sustainable.
We're going to make this work, but because people want beer,
absolutely,
they will buy it.
They
and
will
then
buy it
with the overhead that comes from the beer sales. You can do whatever you want.
Exactly. This year we raised over $10,000 for the Safe Routes to School program.
That's pretty great.
So great.
So I'm not only proud of the company that I've been so fortunate to start, but also this fundraiser.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, and you don't toot your own horn because I had no idea that you were so close to the origins of that event.
But yeah.
It's the first time I went to it. I had heard about it before and I thought, mm-hmm. Oh, that sounds like fun. And I think had something else going on. But I'm definitely going again next year because it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a really great show, wasn't it?
Yeah, this year what? Donnie Kolb, mm-hmm. Leah Benson, and so a couple other folks whose
Diana,
names I can't
Diana
remember.
Rempe from Street Books. She's a Street Books librarian.
Oh, really?
I know. She is so cool.
Yeah.
And then we also had, I'm going to say his last name incorrectly, so forgive me, Michael Tete.
Oh, Michael Tete.
Yeah, Tete from the...
I've said his last name incorrectly, too.
Oh, fantastic. Then we're on the same page. From the Community Cycling Center. So not only were these people... just phenomenal storytellers, but they all do really cool things to support cycling. And they inspired me so much this year.
Seriously. So this mm-hmm. is an enormous advance forward. Next year, Live the Revolution 2017.
Yeah.
Everyone should go.
Everyone should go.
Everyone.
I'm busting like, at the seams.
All 7 billion of you.
Yes. Yeah. People should come from other places. People should make this a destination event.
Yeah. It's really fun, too, because there's like a couple things that I love about it that are behind the scenes that not everybody knows.
Oh. Like, are you willing to pull back the curtain?
I totally am, but it's kind of like boring stuff.
Okay.
So it's like boring pull back the curtain
the
thing.
Big reveal.
The big reveal. It's really fun because this event is like within the BTA, there's a leader chosen to kind of point this event. And it's really cool to see emerging leaders and leaderships and like teams coming together. And that in and of itself is very inspiring, how just the collaboration and effort that the staff of the BTA has is just, it's ridiculous.
So, like, I like this advocacy organization already, and now I like seeing their people work together well.
Yeah, really, really well. And, you know, they're a nonprofit, so the gains aren't substantial. And yet they're so connected to the cause that they work that hard. It's such an honor to work with them. So it's like one of the main things that I love. And then, watching the storytellers craft their stories.
Like, yeah.
They'll usually email me, Jude, this was a lot harder than what I signed up for.
For
I
sure.
Like, I tried to tell you, but I didn't want to scare you away.
Well, so. I always wonder about that when I hear like The Moth, for example, that mm-hmm. storytelling podcast, and they talk about how they workshop their stories. Backbench BDX here locally in Portland also does some storytelling, and they workshop with those folks. And mm-hmm. it
like,
sounds like...
Like you got to send them like... drafts,
yeah, like a pitch, and then you like you kind of develop it, and you're still telling it without notes and everything, right?
Right.
So it's just like this is
a live storytelling event,
seemingly off the cuff, but there's a lot of work that goes into this presentation.
Holy
crap. Our storytellers had to go to 3 workshops to craft their stories, and so that's a huge ask of people.
So
that
I'm really curious now.
Get curious.
Have you ever? Have you ever like had someone pitch you a story and be like, no?
Usually we don't. I mean, certainly we've heard stories that are like, oh,
or like
we
somebody
maybe, tells a story yeah, and you're
without,
like, ooh.
Maybe without saying any names, or like somebody came on board. You're like, yeah, we want to hear your story, and then they like came up with something. You're like,
definitely.
I don't know.
And part of the event is that it's a community event that. I think as we get bigger, we're trying to curate the show a little bit better so that it, you know, it doesn't have those elements to it. But at the same time, we're asking our audience to be a little bit patient with us that, you know, we're doing the best we can. These people have given their time and like, this is the story that they want to share. Mm-hmm. But, to that end, like all the stories this year were outstanding,
top notch. Yeah,
yeah. No. They really did a great job.
And Michael in particular from the Community mm-hmm. Cycling Center. Well, you know Michael,
yeah.
And he's like,
I mean, not personally, but I,
you know who he is. We've talked to him on the show a couple times. We've got to get him back in.
You should. He's great.
He's a guy who does not have. I think I may have said he doesn't have a banal bone in his body. He's
right.
Like,
right.
He is like pure brain from like beginning to end of conversation. Like he's
everything is deep.
Yeah, yeah. I'm very impressed with that guy. He's. He's got a lot of good things to say. And so, like, his story was just about, like, taking his newly born son, you know, of, like, what, a year or two now? I'm trying to remember. Son was just born when we met him, I think. So
that's
maybe,
right.
Like, a year and a half. Anyways, taking his son to his grandma's house. And, like, it sounds pretty simple. But he spun it into this fantastic observation of, like, these are all the urban issues that Portland deals with.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, that was a fantastic presentation.
But it wasn't thrown in your face.
No, it was all personable.
Yeah, it was so, yeah, and it was, and from a native Portlander on top of all of that.
And that's, like, one of the most valuable pieces of it.
Yeah.
Is that he knows this city, so he has the right to talk about it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny, you know, even my complaints about gentrification and the cost of housing and so forth.
Yeah.
It's like the gentrifiers are becoming gentrified. And it sounds like.
Yeah.
So.
And that's when they start to notice it happening.
Right.
Yeah.
So I thought Michael's story really brought us back to, I don't know, to a place of. You fill in the words because it was a very thoughtful place. And I thought he did a very nice job of delivering that.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe we could get him to tell that here someday.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah.
It'd be really cool. It's going to be recorded. It was recorded this last year.
I noticed
by
a bunch.
Visual
yeah.
Aid.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a bunch of cameras and things around. So will people be able to see this somewhere at some point?
Yes. At some point they will be able to see it. Visual Aid is probably going to do a little bit of editing. And then from there we'll have the release of that. So it's going to be fun. It's the first year it's been recorded.
Very good. Do you know, will this be a pay to watch sort of thing? Or is it, will
know.
It be freely available?
It may, my guess is, well, I don't know if I should guess.
No, it's okay. We should probably tell people that they'll have to pay. So then if it's free, they'll be like super excited.
Yay.
You'll have to pay. If you don't have to pay, it'll be used as a, I think it's great to get people excited about coming next year as well.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think.
And donating to the worthy cause that is supported by the event. So yeah.
Yeah. Agreed.
Nice.
I'm sorry. You know, this is, I realize there's a conflict of interest here.
Is there?
There is. Because the Safe Routes to School program really supports helping children find alternative modes of transportation to school, which includes not taking the school bus.
Oh, you know, don't worry about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
No.
Fantastic.
Chances are we wouldn't be taking them to school anyway.
Oh, okay.
Right. Well, we drive special needs kids at the operation we drive for. And so it's like people who like the bus is really the best option for them in many ways. So,
agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think it's fantastic. I think the more ways that there are for people, the more options people have, the more empowered they feel. So I'm all for it. There's no conflict of interest here.
Fantastic.
So I was going to ask you about Epic Wheel Works because that was what you started as, right?
It's true.
It started wheel building, I mean.
It's true. Yeah, I created the brand Epic Wheel Works.
And how long did that last?
I think about 2 years. It's kind of getting fuzzy because we're going into year. We're celebrating our 8th birthday on April 1st, so.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
It's been around for a while.
Yeah, it's been around for a while.
And so Epic, it was a, that was a conflict of interest, right?
That was definitely was specialized, but You know, I take a deep breath here because I think that people assume that I'm bitter about it and sad and so forth.
Tell us how angry you are at Specialized.
I know. They suck. No, you know, I mean, I understand. And I certainly have a lot of reasons to be upset, but I have also a lot of lessons to learn from that as well.
Uh-huh.
Number one, there was no conflict of interest. I don't know. I just didn't, you know, it was a really big gift that Specialized gave me by giving me a cease and desist because,
okay.
Yeah, anytime.
That's not the way that most people would frame that.
No, it really is. Two things. Sugar is such a better name.
Yeah.
Like, it's really Definitely. The best.
Right.
And I would have never come to that had that not happened. And then the second thing is that anytime someone talks about Specialized, they always bring up like the five small businesses that they've screwed over.
Oh, right. Yeah. Oh, yeah, so this is like free promotion, like Roubaix, for example.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's absolutely free promotion. So yeah, there is no way. And most of my a lot of my customers ride Specialized bikes. And I think that's great, you know, glad they're on bikes that work for them and we're happy to help them.
And you know what they're rolling on?
I know what they're rolling.
They're rolling on your product.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's true.
So that really is kind of like the fine, like, well, and I'm trying to make it into a, like, take that Specialized, and that's not what you're saying.
That's
so.
Not. I'm sorry. That's not, yeah.
I appreciate it. This is a good attitude to bring it. It
well,
really
and I
is,
learned, yeah. You know, you have to really go through and see if there's like, you know, what names are being used, how they're being used, this type of thing. It's much easier, you know, after 2 years, such a frustration having to go through rebranding and so forth.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like, gosh, I'm glad it happened at 2 years and not at 8 years. That
Seriously.
Would really suck.
Yeah. It's like any, like if you're starting a band and you're trying to get a band name and like you, any word preceded by the, you know, like yep. any definite article band name has probably been taken.
Yes.
Yeah. And a surprising number of them. I mean, like.
Yeah.
That's why you never use a definite article in your band.
Right,
name.
Right. So like. We're just Who, not the Who.
That's right.
What's your band called? Who? Is there a band called Who?
I'm
As
sure
opposed
there
to
is.
The Who?
I'm sure there is.
We're going to look this up later.
If not, I could imagine that the Who also somehow, in some weird legal way, branded
yeah.
Who.
Just they bought thewho.com and also who.com.
Yes.
Yeah, makes sense to me. So anyways, you were Epic for a while.
It's true.
And you're still Epic, but you're not branded that way.
Not branded that
But
way.
Sugar, it's almost like, I feel like Sugar, like you said, is almost a better name.
It is.
Because
wait, so what was the cease and desist? So they have a Epic brand?
I think they
brand?
Have an Epic bike.
Okay.
Yeah.
And your Epic wheels were too close to the Epic bike.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I just need one.
No, thank you for clearing that up. Because not everybody knows the story.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We don't want to take the whole time to talk about that story.
And
but
that's all. I just needed to know
no,
that
that's
detail.
Good. Yeah.
It's foundational. Yeah. And so just like the difference, though, because like when you hear the word sugar, it's different than when you hear the word epic. So
it's true. And yeah, when we wanted to rebrand or when I wanted to rebrand, I wanted a name that kind of left you smiling.
Yeah.
Had a sense of nostalgia.
Yeah.
And had nothing to do with bikes, wheels, anything like that. I thought that would be much easier to.
Oh, yeah.
What is it called? Trademark.
Yeah, yeah. And your Copyright. Mind would latch onto it. And like it makes an impression, like
Does.
They say in the social media world.
Sure, like Apple with computers, right?
Right, as opposed to food.
Exactly.
But, yeah. No, it's
so, it's like, what else is on the kitchen table? Pepper.
Right. Pepper wheel.
Salt.
Salt wheels.
Yeah, literally. Like,
just keep on trying.
I annoyed everybody around me. What about this wheel works? What about that wheel works? It was really great. And we landed on Sugar. It was really, I mean, and it's a bit feminine as well. And I'm a woman, so it's kind of nice.
You are.
To, it's true. Yeah. Acknowledged here. I mean, it's kind of nice like to at least incorporate some of that into it. It makes it much easier for me to connect with the brand and the name and so forth. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so I was curious, before we talk about you building wheels and such, what do you use your wheels for?
Like my wheels personally?
Yeah.
Or
what do you do on wheels?
Oh, man. I want to do more on wheels, but I am a small business owner, so there's a lot of juggling that happens. The thing I'll give you two things. The thing I love to do most on wheels is touring and gravel rides before they were a thing was always something I loved
doing.
And
we just called that touring.
Yeah, we just called it touring, right? I love touring. That is my hands down one of my favorite things to do.
You have to kind of clarify these days because touring has become such a broad world. What kind of touring do you like to do?
Bikepacking.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like, you know, I went through this phase, and I'm sure a lot of people in their 20s went through this phase of this type of touring where I don't want to rely on anyone or anything, so yes. I will carry with me everything.
those dummies in their 20s.
I know.
That's how I spent most of my 20s.
I spent like a lot of the tail end of my 30s.
Right.
What do you mean the tail end of your 30s?
Nothing.
He's 19.
I like that. Yeah, and the thing that I'm working on is, so I was in an accident, and I have like two broken bones in my left arm from 10 years ago and like plates in it and stuff. And it was really hard to do like mountain biking or to build on those skills and so forth. And a couple of years ago, I got a new mountain bike and I started mountain biking again. And that's like my biggest area for improvement as a rider. And the best place for me to really expand, it's the biggest difference for me to notice what a new set of wheels does or a new set of rims on a different set of hubs. I mean, so much is happening with mountain biking lately, just even in terms of rim width and depth and material and so forth. That is really fun to be out there riding.
Yeah.
And that's the number one thing. I'm so bad at it. So bad.
How do you know?
Well, I know because I'm like chicken sometimes. I hit a rock garden and I'm like, there's no way this bike is going to make it over that. And then I think if I fall, like, and my arm gets stuck between the rocks and it breaks in two again, and then like they have to unscrew the plates and then they have to like rescrew my arm together.
Yeah.
I mean, it goes very dark very quickly.
Yeah.
But
I think about that in terms of my glasses because I've had to fix glasses several times.
Yeah, right? So
yeah.
So it takes a little bit to get over that, but it's been one of those really fun things. And I have to say, it's one of the things that I'm kind of glad that maybe I'm learning in my 30s because I get to do it with my husband. It's like that new thing, this new way of being on bikes together. And it's been really fun to learn with him.
That's good. Yeah. And like every relationship, no matter how good it is, could use an injection of something new.
Totally.
To kind of, you get to see a different side, another side of someone.
Except, you know, I don't think he realizes how spoiled he is because he said to me one day after we went mountain biking, he's like, so, because he has stock wheels on his bike. I thought for his first year, you know, he's going to bang him up. We'll just leave the stock wheels on, right? So he comes to me after the third ride and he goes, when are my custom wheels coming?
I'm just assuming that you're gonna be building like, oh, I have them in the car. I was there working on them for you.
I just wanted to know what color you wanted. So someone's getting new custom wheels this year. I just haven't decided what I, you know, because part of it is he relies on me so much to, you know, design his wheels or rebuild them or to try out new stuff without telling him, so that at the end of a ride, like, I hear his feedback without any like knowledge, you know. So I have some plans for him this year, and they involve like a Minnesota hub company. I know it's gonna be fantastic.
As yet unnamed.
No, it's called Onyx. I'm gonna try him on a new silent clutch style hub.
Say the I know. Silent hub?
It's a completely silent hub.
So no freewheel sound of
no
like
freewheel sound.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
That was like the main thing when I built my rear wheel, that was like the main thing. I went on YouTube listening to like several different samples of hubs to finally like choose one that was like the least annoying of the clicks.
It's a clickless hub.
It's this one.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean
how did I not find
what was the term that David Robinson brought up? Points of engagement?
Oh, yeah. So points of engagement and what am I trying to think of?
Cadence?
No, but it kind of has to do with your cadence. Engagement.
Okay.
Like zero whatever engagement.
But there has to be some engagement, right? Because it has to work.
Sure. So the clutch or brake works, yeah. Huh. So it's like infinity points of engagement.
Right.
As many as you, wow.
Because it just engages when you step on the pedals.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's pretty... pretty incredible. And I think where it really helps is when he'll ratchet backwards, like get over a log or something.
Right.
I think that'll be really helpful for him. It's funny because the worse rider you are, because I'm also really into ping pong these days.
Oh, yeah?
And it's like your paddle, right? So
okay.
Really good players can adapt to a really crappy paddle, but really bad players get used to one high-quality paddle. That's like what you have.
Huh.
Is this like making sense?
So. I think so,
yeah.
Yeah. So
the poor workman blames his tools.
No, not quite. It's like the better you are, the worse equipment you can have.
Okay.
But like the worse you are, the better.
Because your skills will compensate for it.
Exactly.
Somebody who is a little less skill will depend on.
you rely on your wheel set on
like the higher quality or
absolutely.
Or more on the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
You know. To get you by, to sort of make up for your lack of skill.
I was thinking I must be a pretty good bicyclist then.
That's right.
Because my equipment just got engrossed.
That's right.
Yeah. So you're talking about, like, I guess this is what you use your wheels for. What are some things that people don't think about when they're thinking about wheels? Because I would imagine the majority of people out there on their bikes are not thinking about their wheels. There's a lot of people out there that really get into that. They kind of nerd out about it. But most of us are probably not thinking much about what our wheels do. So what are some of the things people should know that they don't necessarily consider?
Great question. Couple of things that I think come to mind are the maintenance of a hub. A lot of people don't think about what they're realistically willing to maintain. Some people want like the cool whiz-bang stuff, but then they're upset when like, whoa, you have to maintain it. So we really try to educate the consumer before they buy something like, hey, this is what this hub requires for maintenance.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you can have a hub, we say it's like the heirloom piece that you'll pass down to, you know, whoever else, right? Or you'll build many iterations around that.
Like this wheel that you're building for your husband.
Yeah. It's the heirloom piece. Exactly. So, so there's that aspect of it. And then there's also the aspect of, what's the quickest way to get better performance and switching tires, like getting, if you're running a really crappy tire on your bike, changing that out to a high thread count, reasonably durable, good grip rubber, especially for road riding, that's going to make the biggest difference.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have tires you prefer?
You know, it depends on the job. I mean, everyone wants absolutes, right? What do you like?
Right.
What's the best tire?
What's the best? What's the worst? And I think it really depends because in some cases, you know, for ride quality, I might like tire X, and for, you know, durability, I might like something different. So it really just depends on what objective you're going for or what is going to be most important to you and how flat tolerant you are, what kind of grip you want, et cetera.
How flat tolerant are you?
You see, this is the thing. All of my bikes are in like a state of disrepair because I'm like, oh, because
you have 32 of them.
You know, exactly, right? So, do you want to, I'm going to let you guys in on a secret here.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell
you.
It's
just us here. No one else is listening.
Can I tell you one quick story that highlights this very quick story? And,
you're getting the hang of podcasting. Right?
Alex, I love you already. I just have to say that to my husband because this is not a good story for him. I mean, it's a great story for him.
All right.
Well, I'll just use no names. So I was riding.
So this hypothetical person.
Yeah, I was riding with this guy. Let's call him Gerald.
Okay.
And I had just met Gerald maybe like a couple months ago, and we decided we're going to go on a bike ride together. Like I'd bring Gerald into my like world of recreational riding. And we're climbing this hill, and Gerald is a natural athlete and is a much faster climber than I am. And so he's hanging back with me, and I'm like, oh, man, it sucks to be slow and, you know, all of these kinds of things. But I'm like, yeah, I'll just meet you at the top. And he looks at me, and he's like, no, I'll hang back with you. You know, remember, we've only been together a few months. I mean, you know, I haven't known him that long.
Yeah.
So it's being trying to be nice. And I look at him and I'm like, what are you going to do if something happens? Or no, I forgot the punchline.
Okay.
This is the story before this.
We'll fix it in post.
Okay, fantastic. So he says to me, he's like, well, what if something happens? And so I look at him and I'm like, well, what are you going to do? And it's like this funny moment of like, oh, yeah. So I really like changing flats because I'm really fast at it and I do it a lot. So to answer your original question, it doesn't bother me. And I find it actually kind of meditative because it's so quick and it's fun. And
do you like patch the tube right then and there?
Or? No, I have a patch line at my house where like tubes that need to be patched go.
Oh, okay. So yeah. you switch out the tube and then you patch it later.
Totally. Yeah, totally. It's not, right. I mean, it depends. Like if it's a nice day and I like where I'm at, I'll patch it there. But most of the time I like to just do it at home.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. And then like a lot of times whatever tube I have is a patched one from before and, you know, thus the cycle goes.
Right. I sadly have not been good at that for most of my career of bicycle riding.
Like, patching?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I go out and buy new tubes all the time because I just, yeah. So I started doing them in batches, like I think you're talking about, like just kind of having it set up where like, if I'm going to do one, I might as well do five. And then you have five new tubes. So
it's true.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. So what are you going to do if something happens, you say to him and Gerald says,
and Gerald says, point taken.
Ah.
And now that's how we ride.
There we go.
I mean, you know, because if he gets a flat, you know, whoever this Gerald character is.
Right. Gerald could fix his own flat.
Yeah. And so well, at the time he couldn't.
You'll catch up and
exactly.
fix Gerald's flat.
Ah, right. There we go.
Now, Gerald says, he doesn't fix his own flats because he's like, you can do it faster. So
right. Cuts both ways, I suppose.
What's the point?
It goes in the flat line. Yeah.
It goes in the flat line.
Okay, yeah.
It's all good, though.
Yeah, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. I'm the type of rider that would prefer a better ride quality over flat protection.
Right.
Yeah.
Really?
I really would.
You would go for, I don't know, I'm trying to think, like something.
Compass tires.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the really
as opposed
thick Schwalbes.
Like, or Vittoria Hyper or something like that. That's like, you know, has better flat protection but not as nice a ride quality.
So you mentioned like thread count in tires.
Mm-hmm.
Is this kind of like cotton sheets? Like
exactly.
You go
like
for the highest
sheets.
Thread count you can get?
Kind of. I mean, there's a point of diminishing returns, I think.
Okay.
I think 320 TPI might be a little... I mean, for my nice road bike, I think that's an appropriate choice. But for a commuting bike, I'd like to be somewhere in the 200s.
Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Nice.
10 is like maybe a little too low.
It's like what I used to buy at Kmart back when I was
exactly.
first getting into bicycling.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I bought a new tire like every month.
Yeah.
Because that's all they'll take.
Yeah.
But you don't build tires, although you probably traffic in them. But You do build wheels.
I do build wheels, but tires are like cheeses to wine.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can't have one without the other.
Yeah, and if you have like a beautiful Pinot and then you have a block of cheddar cheese, it sort of takes away from the Pinot.
Yeah. Or in my case, I don't particularly care for Pinot, so I would say probably the wine would detract from the cheddar. But but it depends on what you like.
I mean, it depends on like what you want
exactly.
the metaphor to be.
Yeah, no, the metaphor works either way. So I was just going to ask as far as like building a wheel, what do people need to think about? Because like, again, most people probably aren't thinking a lot about what their wheels are made of until they have to get a new one.
It's
and
true.
Then the first time I had to get one, I was like, well, they're asking me what kind of rim I want. I have no idea.
Sure.
So I ordered the wrong rim several times. So,
oh, that's a bummer.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, we try to walk people through. We try to, you know, in a situation where someone's not sure of what they want, we take a moment to figure out a little bit about them and kind of help clarify what their objectives are.
Yeah.
And I think once you have that, then you can make a couple of really good suggestions and then you can kind of tell them, hey, these two are going to be kind of similar. This one's more expensive because of this reason. You know, this one will offer you better performance. So it's about figuring out what it is they want before you introduce the product.
Okay.
And then you can do that and it turns into a completely different conversation and you get to the finishing point a lot faster.
Right. Well, I'm sure the more you know about how they intend to use it, the more you can kind of build to spec.
Yeah, I think so. And it's not as complicated and as exciting and tedious as we make it. It's also, there's a lot of right answers. And I think people really get hooked on what is the right answer. And sure. Sometimes there is more than one right answer.
Yeah.
So, stop me if this is a little too much conjecture here. So would you rather have somebody come in and be like, I really don't know what I want, or but I know what I want to use, versus somebody who's like, okay, I want this hub, I want these rims, can you put them together for me?
Oh, so what we do at the end is a validation process. So if you come in and you're like so stoked on this set of components,
yeah,
then we're just going to kind of loosely tie into conversation, oh, so what bike is this going on? Like, where are you going to go? Because we might be able to offer a suggestion like, oh, we should definitely do this. Or, hey, did you know this hub has this upgrade to it? Or, I mean, sometimes you come up with like a glaring discrepancy that you have to bring up. But, you know, sometimes that comes up. But you try to do it in a way that you're building on what people have versus trying to tell them you're wrong.
Right.
You know, sure. Yeah, you're trying to work with them.
The conversation's not going to go well, right?
At that point. But I think a lot of people are afraid of being wrong.
Oh,
and
definitely.
I don't think that it needs to be that way. I think that it's a conversation. And from there, we're on your team. We want you to do well. We want you to like what you ride because we want people to enjoy riding bikes. So,
and I think that's like the common misconception about bike shops. I would say I'm sure are some bike shops out there that are trying to screw people over, but those are pretty few and far between, particularly in this town. And generally, if someone says, well, you need to buy this rim, they probably know what they're talking about. The trick is that not everyone is as good maybe as explaining why you need this.
Yeah, I think some of that's a carryover from sort of like the way we do sales, and also maybe a carryover of how like – there is this mistrust of mechanics, especially in the auto industry.
This
mistrust of like, especially if you don't know what exactly you're doing.
As many of us don't.
Or if you don't have as wide a breadth of knowledge either. And that might be, you know, rim X might be great if you only know about rim W, X, and Y, but there's a whole alphabet of rims. Yeah, you're getting it now. Yeah.
Rim M and N.
Yes. Yeah, so sometimes, and I like to think that because all we do is wheels, that's what we kind of geek out on. And, you know, sometimes, yeah, I mean.
Like, people should trust you over anybody else because you do know what you're talking about.
Well, I think people should engage us in conversation.
Yes.
I think so, because I think that sometimes we're learning a little bit from our customers too. I mean, I want to make that clear that like we're still learning every single day, but we have a really great base of knowledge. So.
Right. Well, it's probably less likely that you'll be mansplained by Sugar Wheelworks, I would guess.
It's true. Yeah. Although sometimes it's really funny. Sometimes I get so into describing something and someone's like, I don't get it. Does anyone get what you just said? And I'm like, thanks for the call out on that. Let me take a step back and like, I think I skipped a few points in here. So it's like, no, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we want people to get it. We want people to feel excited. You know, in a lot of cases, people are spending, you know, a lot of money at our shop, and we want to make sure that they're, you know, respected even, you know, and have the knowledge behind what they're getting. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the takeaway. Do you want to give our call to action?
What does that mean?
You get to tell people what they should do. And it sounds like they should engage their mechanic.
Oh, yeah. I think, totally.
All right, here it comes.
Go ahead. Tell everybody.
Engage your mechanic.
There you go. Because?
Well, I think you should engage your mechanic with good questions. Limit the questions. Figure out at home. Sit down and write down 3 great questions you want to ask your mechanic. Yeah. And then also give them the benefit of the doubt.
There you go.
Like, you know, no mechanic wants to be, like, have a million questions coming at them where they feel they're being interviewed for a job that they already have, right?
Good point.
So that goes back to engage your mechanic.
Beautiful. Thank you. I think we have a very good call to action for people. Yeah. Definitely.
I like that. That was very inspiring.
Isn't it? That's why we put the drums under you to give you even more of a sense of authority.
That's good. Yeah.
Is there any difference in spokes?
Yeah,
should you get
different.
Fancy spokes?
It depends. It depends.
How many butts should I put on my spoke?
At least double, if not triple.
All right.
Last year, we actually engaged Listen, a metallurgical company down in Milwaukee, and they did an independent study of a whole bunch of spokes for us. So we got to see lots of cool stuff under a really high-powered microscope, and that was really fun.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah. So in spokes, what you're really looking for is fatigue life. I mean, there's two types of strength. There's fatigue life, and then there's stiffness. And so high fatigue life matters in many situations, but you also want the wheel set to perform in a certain way, particularly depending on what frame material you have. So if you have a carbon bike, you don't want it to be like a mushy feel. So you want there to be some kind of stiffness to it.
Ah, fascinating. So you want like more spoke give for like the harder or stronger the bicycle frame material is?
Kind of. So.
Ish.
Yeah, ish. You want high fatigue life means that the spoke can go through compression and tension many times over. So that's one type of strength. And then the other is like the lateral strength is basically what you're thinking of.
Sure.
Yeah. So sometimes you want both. Sometimes one doesn't matter necessarily as much, just depending on who you are as a rider and your frame material.
Okay. Nice.
But yeah, the spokes make a really big difference. I like to say it's the unsung hero of the wheel. The unstrung.
Well, it's hard. Yes, it is difficult to think about those when there are so many sexy hubs out there to talk about.
It's true.
So, yeah. Okay. Very cool. Well, so people can find you sugarwheelworks.com.
That's true. Sugarwheelworks.com.
That was just a guess. I didn't write that down yet. So
no, that's great.
Glad
that was
to hear
a good
it.
Guess.
Excellent. Do you have time to hang out with us for news and mail?
Sure. Let's
All right.
do it.
Fabulous.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. I like my bike, it's fast. It circles around the city lights.
Hey, that hot sauce does actually do amazing things for your sinuses.
I bet.
I feel better already.
You should add some cayenne to your coffee tomorrow morning.
Maybe I should just some kombucha hot sauce to my coffee tomorrow.
Or that, yes.
Or maybe I should replace my morning coffee with kombucha hot sauce.
This is Brock's new addiction.
Mm-hmm.
First up, an announcement. Lumberjack, Brock's band, is playing the Old Gilbert Road Tavern on March 4th.
That's right. And I know a bunch of you don't listen in town, so don't feel bad. You're not in Portland right now. But if you are in Portland, March 4th, come out and see us. It's a free show.
Yeah, that's...
It would be fun.
Friday?
It's a Friday night, yeah.
Yeah, it's a Friday from... The Friday from this Friday.
Yeah, it's coming up. And then after that.
After that, Humanity on Wheels.
Oh,
4/5/16 at 7 p.m. Brought to you from Kick-Ass Oregon History and TriMet Diaries at the Jack London Bar.
Yeah, it's April 5th.
Yeah, I said that.
No, just, I like to say the name of the month.
You know. Oh, right. Yeah. Yes. Yes, at the Jack London Bar, which is underneath the Rialto. Doors open at 7. Show begins at 7:30. This event is free.
Yeah.
Selected storytellers will open the evening. Sarah Merck, Dan Christensen, William Reagan, Robert Wagner, Dr. Jeff, and Heather Gogan will all share stories of riding TriMet. You know whose name I don't see on there?
Who's that?
Brock Didis.
That's right. That's because there's an open mic section where
there you go.
Allegedly I'll be sharing a transit story.
Yes,
I'm still trying to figure out.
Master of Ceremonies, KAOH, Kick-Ass Oregon Histories. Doug Kent Crispin will introduce an open mic section of the program where audience members can share their own Portland mass transit stories.
There's also going to be live music from Dr. Something.
Oh, cool.
And I don't have a copy of the song to play right now, but there is a song called Beaverton TC. Which is, of course, the Beaverton Transit Center over on the west side.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Dr. Something has been making transit music for some time, so.
And Shitsplosion at the Lloyd Center Macy's.
A song called Shitsplosion at the Lloyd Center Macy's. So, yes, this is a thing that, it's not a genre necessarily, but it's just really interesting music. It's kind of like low-key, and I believe there's like some flute or something.
Oh, man. He better... Dr. Something better get on the...
Oh, and Dr. Something, I think,
music.
Is a lady.
Oh,
I could be wrong.
Even better.
If I'm wrong, I may have some explaining to do when I meet Dr. Something. But yes, So anyways, that's all coming.
Yes, go there.
Humanity on Wheels, it's a good event. It is not, in fact, sponsored, affiliated with, or associated with TriMet.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we should probably say that.
That's right, yep.
Next up, from Surly, via Wayne Norman, their blog post, Don't Be a Dick.
That's right.
You've mentioned this rule before, but thought this was still worth forwarding on. P.S. I sometimes say this to myself when driving.
When driving, yes. It's a good article, so it's worth a read.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I read that pretty much right then and there. There isn't anything that Surly makes that I probably wouldn't eat up right away.
Or wear. Yeah.
Look at that.
Aaron is dressed in Surly tonight.
Yes, this is my Surly jersey.
What year is your Surly jersey? Or does it matter?
It's 2015, I think.
Okay, nice.
Yeah,
that's a pretty new one.
It's fairly new, although I shredded the sleeves already.
That's how you know you like it.
That's right.
Yeah, and it makes it kind of punk rock. Yeah. Jude, do you have a favorite piece of bicycle clothing? Or clothing that you wear for a bicycle ride?
I'm like clad in wool all the time.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
So you know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I know. And I happen to wear a non-shredded cuff.
Haha.
For you guys tonight.
Oh, thank you.
Oh. Yeah.
Dressing up.
Yeah.
Dang.
Dressing up.
Yeah. Well, you may not have a non-shredded cuff, but you know what you do have.
What do I
have? Hey, we got mail.
That was good. That was really good. I didn't.
Oh, thanks.
I didn't see that one coming.
We've been working on our segues. Right.
First up, Alex on Twitter. I love the show, and Aaron's Wi-Fi only device has been brought up a few times. How does that work? And can he make calls on it?
Aaron, yes, how does that work?
I can make calls on it.
Yeah?
It works. I don't know how Wi-Fi works.
We were really counting
on you. You're going to have to ask someone else.
To bring the answers to us. No, you have an iPod Touch.
Yes, I have an iPod Touch, and I use I use Google Voice for my texting, which is ironic because you can't actually use any voice application on Google Voice, but
right.
You use Google Hangouts to make phone calls. And I use, unfortunately, I'm either constantly on speakerphone or I'm plugged into headphones.
Okay.
You know, you can't quite use it as an actual like phone to my head.
You can't have that like handset against the head feeling.
No.
That so many of us love.
Which honestly,
all the kids are doing it today.
Actually,
all the kids are talking to each other on their phones.
So much freer. Now I have two hands.
Yeah.
So that's the basic gist of it. And actually it was you that, Brock, that guided me through it.
I did it from 2010 to 2015.
Right.
And then I decided to buy a cell phone plan. So now I'm one of those, I have like a drug dealer phone chip or something. Yeah. It's pay by the month.
So like every so often you like crush the chip and put a new one in there? Though?
Right. So they can't trace my activity.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Jude, do you have feelings about phones? Are you a big phone fan, or would you rather they didn't exist? Or somewhere in between?
I'm a huge text fan.
Yeah?
Yeah.
It's really useful, right?
It is.
It's useful for, like, trading information.
Yeah, and really, that's all. Like,
It's not useful for, like, deliberating where you're going to go see a bar, especially if you're trying to do it with, like, three or four people.
Yeah. Exactly.
But yeah. I do like text in that, like, you can get a message without having to make a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
You know,
otherwise, there's the small talk I feel obligated to have.
Right.
Hello, how's it going?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
I don't know. I don't think I have whatever that is that everybody else has.
Small talk chip?
I think I was born without that. Yeah.
No, I have a surgery to remove mine. But
I don't know. I did like to swim underwater a lot. So
okay,
there's that.
A lot of holding the breath.
Yeah.
Anyway, no, I'm usually like straight and to the point. You know, I'll do the like, hey, how's it going? Great. I need you to.
And then, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, what's up? What's happening? Rob and Eric talk about some Strava and GPS art.
Yeah.
And this article is pretty cool because can you see this screen over here when it loads?
Okay,
yeah. So Strava, famously.
Oh, yeah. I've seen people do this.
So cool.
There's some really, really very delicately drawn stuff.
I like the hummingbird.
God, that hummingbird.
Yeah.
Where was that done?
City streets. That's a good question. Stephen Lund, and he's a Canadian, we know. So, yeah.
He's a Canadian that we know, like we know him?
No, no, we know that he is from Canada.
Oh.
I would have to look a lot closer. I didn't take the time to check it out. Although, wait, Victoria. Victoria is in Canada.
That is.
Nice.
I mean, the detail and the arc of those wings.
Seriously, yeah. That means that, like, for that much detail, there must be a very...
It's got to be several, like, diagonal streets, right?
Well, and it's got to be large as far as, mm-hmm. you know, the...
Right, right.
The scale on which it's done.
He did
it's
a lot of riding.
Yeah, so this is pretty cool. Anyways, I've always liked the idea of making some kind of a pattern out of my rides.
Mm-hmm.
And I've started doing that now that I have my own Strava. I have a thing that I made up by where I work.
Do you
I
have call your, it the, your posts?
No.
Your art, your Strava art yet?
Not yet, no. Yeah. But I think there's another thing that someone was going to do. I feel like there was something coming up, like for Petalpalooza or something.
I feel like it's a living Etch-A-Sketch.
That's right. What I was thinking of. Yeah. And much like my Etch-A-Sketch art, it starts off really nice and then like just turns into just zigzags.
Yeah, and it's worth, I mean, yeah. Yeah, it's worth going out for the exercise for sure.
Yeah.
So Rob, also from Virginia, I feel bad because I think he asked for my friendship on Strava, and then like, wait, I don't know any Rob. And so I unfriended him or disconnected him or whatever. And then he asked again, and he also sent me an email saying, hey, I'm not creepy. I listen to the podcast. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. So anyways, sorry about that, Rob. But he says he looks forward to visiting Portland one day and getting a beer at the Beer Mongers. He also said, my teenage son thinks it is gross that you eat burritos out of the trash. His reaction was hilarious. Hey, it's
don't
free
knock
food.
It till you've tried
it's
it.
It's free food. How do you feel about trash food?
I have, you know, I endorse it fully.
Good. Thank you. I'm glad to hear that.
Yes.
The only reason why I wouldn't pull out like a burrito from the trash or anything like that, because chances are is it's not going to be something I'd want to eat anyway.
Well, right. It might be. Yeah. It might not be vegetarian.
Right. You're generally less picky than I am.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of ground scored burritos are in fact made of meat.
Yes.
So there's that.
I think there's a connection to be made there.
Unless you go to the Pizza Research Institute, like there, if
there
you find
go.
Their pizza on the ground, except you wouldn't because it's so good. Like people take that stuff home with them.
Yeah.
I get scolded when I go to the theater and I look for popcorn in the aisles.
Dude, that's the only way to get popcorn in the theater.
I don't see any other. I'm not paying for popcorn.
It's so fucking expensive. If you try and buy it from the vendor, it's like, I mean.
Top hats.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do.
There you go. Walk in with a top hat.
Yeah. Have your own stack. Right?
Exactly. And you flip it over and that becomes the bowl.
There we go. Perfect. I guess you'd have to protect the material the hat's made from, right? You have to like line it with something.
Well, don't like use your grandfather's like heirloom hat.
Or like a 10-gallon hat would also work.
Yeah. Just exactly. Make one out of paper or something. Yeah.
Get one from a vintage
I played
shop.
A pilgrim in the school play. Leave me alone.
Yeah. So next Halloween when the pop-up Halloween costume shop comes around that you know what you're getting.
That's right.
Yeah. Top hat.
There we go.
They're suddenly going to be all out of top hats.
Yeah. Liz Thomas. Wayne also sent us. Liz Thomas is planning a PDX urban hike. And I'm not sure. This was a little bit ago. I don't know if she's done this yet or not. If she's been here. I don't think she has. But she's like a long distance hiker.
Oh.
And so she does a bunch of epic adventures. And she's looking for a place to do some sort of film project in Portland. She wants people's suggestions where she should walk.
The stairs.
All of them.
Of the Southwest.
There's so many stairs in Southwest.
Yes.
I would like to do the Southwest trails. I'm curious. It's not really a biking thing because most of them involve stairs or something.
Yeah.
But there's so many trails just crisscrossing the Southwest part of Portland. It seems like I would like to go out and like walk them all someday.
It's pretty cool. When I was biking last Monday, I got to see like some of them as I was going through the West Hills and such.
Yeah. There's so many. It's great.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I like stumble onto like a secret that, you know, only so many people know.
It's true. Southwest is the secret that no one knows about in Portland.
It's true.
It's just
so hard to get to.
Less fun to bike in, yeah. Phil in Alaska, he says, for you about South Dakota. He says there's some amazing riding there.
I can tell you that there is some amazing riding throughout that state. Note, though, that inside the boundaries of Badlands National Park, one can only ride on established roadways, of which there are few with only one main east-west route. During the height of tourist season, riding this road is a death wish. It is narrow, a country two-lane, just over 16 feet side to side, has no shoulders, often has steep drop-offs on each side, is a chock-a-block with climbs in the 10 to 14% grade range, and to top it all off, is populated by drivers who are more interested in the scenery than watching the road. That said, I'd love to ride it myself, but in May or September, after the mindless hordes have left. It is a beautiful and special place.
Yeah, and you know how wide two RVs are?
16 feet.
About that, yeah.
I was wondering, did he bring his measuring tape with?
I would assume so.
How do you eyeball 16 feet?
He gave us very accurate figures.
Yeah.
I mean, I do know.
I've been to the Badlands. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
He's pretty knowledgeable about infrastructure in general.
Wow.
Right. Well, and he rides on the back of a bear while wearing the skin of a bear.
That's
so
right.
He's from Alaska. Wow. Although he's from South Dakota before that, so, yeah.
Which, I mean, you know, of course he was also from South Dakota.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's conquered one state and moved on to the other.
Definitely.
That is, you know, harder to conquer.
That movie, The Revenant, was actually about Phil. He also said that he uses a Garmin Fenix wrist top GPS unit with HRM, which I'm assuming is heart rate monitoring. He gets a super accurate calorie number and doesn't need a phone to track his calories while he exercises, which is
Ooh.
Cool. Yeah, I would love that, but apparently they cost like $300.
Eee.
So,
yeah.
But
you don't have to
cool.
rely on cell phone service.
And he says it has a track back feature, so if he gets lost in the woods, he can get unlost and drag the bear back with him.
Richard congratulates Portland on finally getting a bike share program. I'm sure this might be old news to you, but congrats on the bike share. I guess if a city has to ask, they just need a bike share program. The answer can be, just do it. Get it? Because it's sponsored by Nike.
I added that last part.
I love that. Oh, you added that?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
He was being subtle, and I was like, well, yeah. Because Nike World Headquarters is over in Beaverton.
Right.
And now the bike share.
Bike share.
Just like Citibank sponsors the bike share in New York, and there are other sponsored bike programs. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, I don't know who does all of them.
Some of them are sponsored by bike share companies. So there's that. Well, it's been a good show. Jude, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Do you have a theme on which we should close out this show? Is there some sort of atmosphere we should set or some sort of character we should slip into as we read the credits?
I want us to maybe slip into the character of... that's going to be a hard character to convey. Now I got nothing.
Maybe we should try.
Well, I really like people that are optimistic and give good high fives. Like,
ooh.
Can you do that character?
Like the happiest credits ever.
Yeah, the happiest credits ever.
Ooh. Can we high five?
Or could we do like the epic credits? Like just after, just, I mean, oh.
No, I'm not salty about it.
But it would be a violation of terms. Like we would get a cease and desist letter if we tried to do epic credits.
Right. But I mean, like after, you know, two people have just finished, you know.
Doing what?
Nothing.
Talking?
Talking about things.
Yeah.
I don't know where I was going.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see.
Right.
Let's do enthusiastic.
The most enthusiastic.
We can't high five, but we can like clap hands and like snap fingers and
we can't high five?
Well, I mean, physically, it's difficult for
see,
us to high five
like,
where we
it's
are.
It's like people like you. You're just like you're like you stop right there. Like how could we? No, I'm kidding.
I'm tired. I'm tethered to the mic. That's the problem.
I'm bringing the mountain
see?
To Mahomet.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Look at that guy. Look
bringing
at that
the
guy.
Bear to Phil.
That's right. All right.
All right. So this would be my high five hand
Hold
if
on.
It reaches yours.
This is. Oh, and do you know how to do a good high five?
No.
Oh, let me teach you real quick. So the best
you look
way.
At the elbow.
You look at the elbow.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Look at the elbow.
Yeah.
All right. There we go.
Did you feel that smack?
Did you see that shit?
I did. Yeah.
That was good. That was art. That was art.
All right. Would you like to be closer so you can high-five us as well?
No, I'm enjoying it. Remember, you guys gave me an entire beer on a Monday night.
That's true. Stay away from the electronics.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, then here come our credits.
Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Yeah. Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter at Sprocket Podcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Hurtbird for our headline sounder.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to our sustaining donors, Logan Smith, Johnny K, and Shadowfoot.
Katrina Mellengard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson. Woo!
Yeah, Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson.
Cameron... Ow. Tim Moon.
Orange and Purple. Glenn Kubish. Matt Kelly.
Jim Gooden. Eric Wise. Doug Cohen Miller.
Todd Parker. Scott McAllister Morgan. Chris Gonzalez.
Dan Gebhardt. Zoe Campagna. Andy Brunner.
Dave Knows. Chris Smith. Christy Kaster.
Caleb Jenkinson. Woo! JP. Q Lee. Peanut Butter Jar. Matt.
Patrick Archane. Gabriel Trainer. Sebastian Poole.
Marco Lowe. Rich Arterstrom. Andrew Alderson.
Drew the Welder. Anna. Krista Skukas.
John Wasserman. Andre Johnson. Shelley and Troy.
King of Division. Josh Disson. Richard G.
And Guthrie Straw.
Woo! Now everybody go, yeah.
And brush your teeth.
And go to a Tony Robbins thing.